A modern-day spiritual messenger joins us back, Neil Donald Walsh. Of course, you may remember him from his Conversations with God series, best-selling book. His latest is called The Essential Path, and he is with us next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Neil Donald Walsh back with us as a modern-day spiritual messenger whose work has touched the lives of millions. He has written 37 books on contemporary spirituality in the 20-plus years since he's been reportedly having an experience in which he felt the presence of the divine. He began writing questions to God on a yellow legal pad and received answers in a process that he describes as exactly like taking dictation. And what emerged from that encounter was the Conversations with God series, and of course his latest work is called The Essential. Neil, welcome back to the program.
Hey, it's nice to be here, George. Thank you very much. Lovely to be returning.
Looking forward to
this wonderful space.
If I remember, you were living out of your car when this was all happening, weren't you?
Yeah, I was living on the street. I didn't need, what's interesting about this is even my car was stolen. So I really fell to my knees at that point, and I was calling out to God, you know, what does it take to make life work? What do you want from me? What else could happen? Here I am on the sidewalk anyway with nowhere to live. I'm living out of my car, and then I'm walking the streets trying to pick up a few pennies, and I come back and the car is gone. And the police, you know, are laughing at me. They say, well, when was the last time you saw it? I said, about an hour and a half ago. It was about an hour ago, I guess. And they said, oh, are you kidding me? By now the car's been totally parted out. You can forget about that. So that was my story. Interesting way to live for a while. It was an interesting period of time in my life.
It sure was. Would you ever trade it to do it all over again?
You don't know. It's an interesting question, and my answer is no, I wouldn't trade it. This is, I'm happy that it happened, in retrospect, of course, easy to say over my shoulder, but as I look over my shoulder, I see that all of those events were perfectly timed in the perfect way to bring me to the experience that I had, and that has changed my life, and frankly, the lives of millions of people.
Absolutely. Your Conversations with God series has just influenced and touched so many people across this planet. The numbers are endless. It's in the millions, isn't it?
Yes, they're telling us now anecdotally that there are probably 15 million people have read the books. They know that 7 or 8 million have actually purchased them. It's a hand-to-hand book. Every book that's been purchased has been shown to at least a wife or a husband, a brother-in-law, or some friend. So it's a book that is wide reach, and it's been translated into 37 languages.
When you first wrote the first Conversations with God, have you found that since then this planet has changed dramatically? Because I just feel like, Neil, people are uptight. They don't seem happy. It's weird, but it's a feeling I have.
Well, you're right on the money, of course. That's exactly what's happening. And it's not only that they're unhappy, they're actually alienated from each other. We're experiencing, in my observation, George, a level of alienation between people all over the world, not just in the United States, but all over the world, a level of alienation that I've never seen in my lifetime. People are just making each other so wrong, and we're so separated from each other, but we don't know why. That's the problem. We don't understand what is the cause. That is, I mean, I think it's the biggest problem in the world today, what we're discussing here now, is what's causing dysfunction everywhere, political dysfunction, economic dysfunction, social dysfunction, and yeah, even spiritual dysfunction, in the sense that our world's religions don't seem to be able to do anything to turn this situation around. So you're right. People are nervous, they're upset, and they're unhappy, and they have a reason to be, because they're seeing this level of dysfunction that I'm talking about. They're seeing this alienation that's so powerful that it's affecting the world entire.
Well, and it's also starting to affect their personal lives, their relationships, perhaps their jobs. It's really playing havoc with them, isn't it?
In profound ways. And what's most upsetting about it is that, as I was saying, nobody knows what to do about it. We're looking to our presidents, our country's prime ministers, our premiers. We're looking to our religious leaders, the Pope, the chief rabbi, the head ulama, heads of all of our world's religions. We're looking to the captains of business and industry. We're looking to people that have led the way in the past to get us out of this mess. And nobody seems to understand what is causing all of this. What is the problem that's creating this? You know, alienation, George, has inevitably arisen in the aftermath of ongoing citizen frustration. This is not a new thing, but never at the level we're seeing today. Citizen frustration inevitably arises in the aftermath of ongoing societal dysfunction. And that's really what we're seeing around the world. Ongoing systemic failure is what we're looking at. You know, we've put into place on this planet a lot of systems that were supposed to make life better for us. You know, political systems, economic systems, social systems, spiritual systems. None of them are working. As a matter of fact, if you don't mind my making the observation, not only are they not working, they're actually producing exactly the opposite result of the result we hope they would produce. Politics, our political systems are not producing a safer and a more congenial world, but producing exactly the opposite.
And my concern too, Neil, is it seems to be passing down to children or younger people, and they're carrying this torch, unfortunately, as well.
Are they ever? And they're getting it from a variety of sources, our entertainment sources. They're getting it from everything from video games to television programs they're watching.
Social media.
Precisely. And you know, that's fascinating. There's something ironic about this. We thought that social media, the so-called miracle of the Internet, was going to bring us closer together, and it's done exactly the opposite. It's torn us further apart because we're using social media. Many people, way too many people, are using social media to incite violence and anger between people and to separate people from the highest thoughts that they have about themselves and about each other. And without wanting to get into political disparagement, there are some leaders around the world. We had an interesting experience just this day with President Bolsonaro from Brazil throwing brickbats to President Macron of France.
Yeah. Yes.
Two world leaders who are shouting at each other, and they aren't the only presidents of the only countries who are providing our young people with models of behavior that's like, wait a minute, what am I missing here? Are we really supposed to be bullying each other, verbal bullying each other, and insulting each other to the point where we've lost our sense of who we are in relationship to each other and in relationship to ourselves? It's a very strange time.
Well, and that makes younger people, or just about anybody, to say, I can do that too. I mean, if they're going to bully each other or do this or that, why can't I?
Exactly. That's exactly, and that's what's happening. And as we look at the epidemic of mass shootings that we're seeing around the world and in the United States, we notice that so many of them, not every single one, but the largest majority by far, are young people, young white males, anywhere from 18 to 21 years old. And that's what's happening. That's the outcome of what we're talking about.
What would you say is the single biggest problem on the planet? Alienation?
I would say alienation is the outcome of the single biggest problem on the planet. But I would say that the single biggest problem on the planet is that we don't know what the single biggest problem is. That is, the people who ought to be able to look at these things and figure out what is causing this alienation situation are unable to do so. They don't see the nature of the problem. They're trying to solve the problem of the world, all the problems of the world, as I see it, at every level except the level at which the problems exist. They're trying to solve the problem with political means. It's not working. They're trying to solve the problem by throwing money at it. It's not working. They're trying to solve the problems by every device except the only device. They're even trying to solve the problems militarily. You know, so they think it's a military problem or an economic or a political problem. And the challenge here is that it's not any of those. It's a spiritual problem.
What do you think
in the world today? I'm sorry, George. Go ahead.
What do you think, though, Neil, is that common denominator that's making all this happen?
Anger.
Yeah.
Anger.
But something's fueling that.
Yeah. And what's fueling it is a belief that it's not us that's causing the problems that we're upset about. It's those other people. So what's fueling it is the notion, which is encouraged by many world leaders these days, that it's those others that are creating creating the problem. Those unwanted immigrants, those angry women, those unintelligent students, those wild-eyed liberals, those crazy conservatives, those other people, those inappropriate gays, whoever it is, we can blame it. It's those others. And we're angry. If only those others would stop doing what they're doing, life could be the way it used to be. And so we've gotten into this profile where we are telling ourselves that it's those people, it's them against us. And suddenly, for the first time in my lifetime, at this level, we've always had some disagreements between people, of course, but I've never seen it at this level, where we find ourselves waking up to an us-against-them world.
Yeah, the disagreement and what used to be common respect for people's opinions seems to have gone right out the window.
Totally. Let me tell you, the days have gone by, all for one and one for all. That went out the window when the Three Musketeers, the story of the Three Musketeers was all for one and one for all.
That's
not
right.
Anymore.
Exactly.
We now see
right.
Ourselves as entities with separate needs, separate agendas, separate desires, separate intentions, separate everything, actually. Except maybe national identities, and those are boundaries we don't want anyone to mix themselves in. We're going to put walls up or whatever we have to do to keep people out of our countries and out of our clubs and out of our organizations if they look or sound or act differently from the way we are.
Is it difficult for someone even like you, who I believe is very enlightened, to get through the day-to-day routines of all of this?
I'm not going to lie and say, no, it's not difficult, but I think it's less difficult for me and people who are seeing the problem for what it is, because I think we see the solution as well and the possibility that the solution offers us. And so I think that we're pretty clear what the problem is. And so those of us who are in the place that I find myself are very clear that we have to stop trying to solve the problem at every level except the level at which the problem exists. We have to look at the problem square in the face. The problem is our belief in separation, George. We actually believe as a species more and more that we live in a cosmology of separation, that we are a civilization consisting of billions of individual units that we call people, whose existence includes no biological or physical unity with each other whatsoever, and whose experience daily often includes as well very little, if any, emotional, philosophical, political, or spiritual unity. We're simply separate from each other, and we want nothing to do with each other. If they don't look like us, speak like us, think like us, and act like us, it's those other people that are the problem. And so, but I'm not having as much of a difficulty on a day-to-day basis as many other people are, because I look at the long view, and I really see this actually as a quite predictable outcome of the evolutionary process of the species. To put it in blunt terms, we're finally growing up, and these are the last tantrums of our youth. You know, human beings, our species is a very young species, as the cosmos goes. Very, very young.
Absolutely.
And the anthropologists have shown us that. We're just an extraordinarily immature species, but we're just coming out of our youth as a species in the cosmos, and we're beginning to look at things in a different way. But these are growing pains, and that's what's happening right now.
Are people pulling away from that entity that has changed your life, and that is the God factor? Are they going the opposite way from that?
Well, yes and no. Some are and some are not. And I think that some are not necessarily pulling away from God, but they're holding an image of this thing called God that's, in my view, entirely different from and inaccurate with regard to the true nature of God itself, of divinity itself. So I think that the challenge is not so much that people are pulling away from God as it is more that people who are not pulling away from God are believing in a God that's in ways that are inaccurate, that have nothing to do with the actual divine being. And that's, I think, the problem. We think that God is a judging, punishing God who's going to get us in the end if we don't see the way he wants us to
toss a flood on us or something.
Yeah, and hello, and that allows us to talk about imitating. We're not only imitating our world leaders in many countries, we're imitating the God we believe in. Hey, you know what? If it's good enough for God, it's good enough for me.
Well, with Neil Donald Walsh, his latest book is called The Essential Path, subtitle, Making the Daring Decision to Be Who You Truly Are. Tell me about that subtitle, Neil.
I think it's the solution to the problem, deciding who you really are. We have a big decision to make. You know, human beings have a huge decision to make, and it's probably the biggest decision that each of us could make individually and that we could make collectively as a species. And that decision is this: who are we really? Are we simply, after all is said and done, physical entities, chemical creatures, no different from a dolphin or a whale or a bird in the sky? You know, maybe more complex, fair enough. But beyond that, just another form of life, another mammal. Is that who we really are? We're born, we live, we die, and that's the beginning and the end of it. Or is it possible, just possible, that there's something we don't fully understand here about who we are, the understanding of which would change everything? Is it possible that we are actually spiritual entities who simply have a body and a mind? And if that's true, it brings up a whole host of other questions. Why would a spiritual entity manifest in physical form on a planet like the Earth? What is the whole purpose of life if we are, in fact, spiritual entities? That's the decision that we have to make. The daring decision we have to make is, who are we and what is our true nature? Even for those people who say, you know what, Neil, I kind of agree with you. And these are, by the way, millions of people who belong to what I call, with no disrespect intended, but standard brand religions.
Right.
Even people who belong to so-called standard brand religions may say, Neil, I agree with you. We are spiritual entities. We all have souls, not just bodies and minds. We all have a soul. But that's where we diverge between their beliefs and mine, because the second part of our decision is not just are we spiritual or merely physical, but if we are in fact spiritual beings, what is the nature of the beings that we are? That is, are we individual spiritual entities? One out of 7.5 billion spiritual entities having no connection with each other in any kind of real way? Or in fact, is it possible that we are simply individual expressions of a single entity? Is it possible that we are to God, as, if I could use a metaphor, as a wave is to the ocean? You know, the wave is not separate from the ocean. It arises as an expression of the ocean, a quite individual expression of the ocean, but it's not other than the ocean. It is simply the ocean in individual form. And when the expression of the wave is complete, it recedes back into the ocean. Wonderful metaphor that I was given in conversations with God to explain my relationship with the divine. If we hold ourselves in that way, if we see ourselves in that way, we would treat each other in an entirely different way. We would end the cultural story of separation forever as a result of that major decision. We would start treating ourselves and each other in entirely different ways. We would never allow 1.5 billion people on this planet, as we're talking this evening, to have not even a single drop of clear water. We would never allow 1.8 billion people to have no electricity. Even in this, it's hard for me to believe when I look at those numbers, but even in this year of 2019, we're talking about 1.7 or 1.8 billion people who still don't have electricity, but it gets even worse.
It's crazy, isn't it?
It's insanity. 2.5 billion people do not have indoor plumbing. We're talking about one quarter of the human race in the year 2019 still relieving themselves outside. Now, people might say, oh, Neil, you're making more of this than needs to be made. I mean,
oh, it's true.
I'm sorry?
It's true.
Yes, but they might say, well, it's just an inconvenience. It's an inconvenience. I mean, you know, people have lived this way for thousands and thousands.
Hold on, Neil. We're at a break. We'll come right back with more. We'll take calls with you next hour. Neil Donald Walsh with us, The Essential Path. And our special guest tonight, Neil Donald Walsh, his latest book, The Essential Path. His website's linked up at coasttocoastam.com. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. George Norrie with you. Neil Donald Walsh with us. His latest book, The Essential Path, that has just recently come out. And I noticed Democratic hopeful Marianne Williamson wrote a little blip for you.
Yes, well, Marianne and I have been wonderful friends for over 30 years, and it was very kind of her to do that. And she said some very sweet things, and we've been walking together in many ways for a couple of decades and more.
Let me read it to everybody. At a time when we so need hope, Neil shows us where to find it. That's very nice. How do we find this hope, Neil?
I don't know that we find it so much as we create it, that we decide to be it. We find it by deciding. This is part of that major decision we were talking mm-hmm. about before the break. We don't really find it so much as we decide to be it. I hate to sound, expected but predictable, but, Gandhi had it right. We need to be the change we wish to see. So it's a process of self-selection. And no one is going to come along. We don't have a King Arthur out there who's going to take the sword Excalibur and touch each of our shoulders and knight us in the field. We have to self-select. We have to say, oh, you know what? I'm not going to look for it anymore. I'm not going to try to figure out how I can find it. I'm going to actually be it so that others can find it because of me, because of how I have showed up in their life. So that's my answer to that question.
Do you think... And there's no question. I mean, there are a lot of good people on this planet who care about other people. Can they win in the long run against those who are constantly fighting this?
Not only can they win, they're going to. I'm very clear that...
You're very optimistic.
Well, because I believe in the system. I believe in what's going on and how it's happening. I see this as part of a long-range evolutionary process, and it's not going to be the end of humankind, but the beginning of a new way of being human. And as I mentioned earlier, it's part of our growing pains, but I don't think it's the end of us. I think it's really the beginning of us in many ways, as we are recreating ourselves anew in the next grandest version that we ever had about who we really are as a species, as individuals, and as a collective. Yes, so I'm very optimistic, and I'm seeing cultural creators all across the planet now rising up and saying, whoa, just a minute, excuse me, please, if you don't mind. Whether it's the green movement, whether it's the climate change movement, and in many, many other ways, politically, socially, economically, we're seeing, and by the way, something we talked about before, young people are not only at the forefront of some of the behaviors we're not so happy about on the planet, but also at the forefront of this movement to stop all of that and change the way we are experiencing ourselves as a species. I'm very proud of the young people who are leading, for instance, the climate change movement, mm-hmm. the climate crisis movement. We're talking about not people in their 50s, 60s, and 70s, but people in their 20s, 30s, and 40s.
And I like the fact that they're trying to take a stand politically and get involved in, various movements. But what, didn't we do that when we were that age, Neil?
Yes, we did. But I don't think we had the kind of force that we have now. When we were little, we didn't have the reach that is now available
right.
to people because of the internet and the applications, the WhatsApp, and all the things that are going on, the ways that we communicate with each other, and how we can instantly create viral ideas. You see, the process by which humanity evolved in the past was a process of mutation, basically. It took many generations for us to transfer information from one generation to the next, genetically speaking, so we knew how to exist, how to survive in cold weather, warm weather, under these conditions, under those conditions. But these days, we have a new process. Imitation is replacing mutation as the process of adaptation. We've seen ideas go viral in 6 weeks. A new catchphrase that young people throw into our global vocabulary. Pretty soon,
and it pops up.
Yeah, everyone's using it everywhere. Some young man in Cleveland decides to put a baseball cap on sideways instead of the way we used to wear when we were kids. Pretty soon, everyone in the world is wearing their baseball caps sideways, mm-hmm. wondering why we think they're strange. So we see we now have the capability, which we did not have when you and I were young, the capability of causing an idea that we agree with to go viral. And that's the power of communication we did not have when we were young.
You have written this book, The Essential Path, to almost be handed down to friends after somebody reads it.
The whole purpose of the book is in fact for that to occur, and it's already occurring. The book's been out about 8 weeks, and that's already happening based on the information I'm receiving and the emails that I get and the response that I'm getting, that people are saying, okay, there is a way out of this mess that we've gotten ourselves into, and that is the essential path. The way out is the way through what we've created, and that way is about making the decision we've been talking about, the decision to say, you know what, I am not simply a mammal. I'm not simply a chemical creature. I am a spiritual being, and I am an individuated expression of the only thing there is. And I'm not only going to embrace such a notion, and here's where the screw turns, of course, here's where the action comes in. I'm not only going to embrace such a notion, I'm going to start acting that way. In everything that I think and say and do, I'm going to start being that person who knows who he or she really is and chooses to put that into the space so that the idea can go viral. As we begin to look to our left and to our right and see people behaving in this brand new way, and we see the obvious benefit of it, and when that idea goes viral, who was it that said, all the armies in the world can't stop an idea whose time has come? Victor Hugo said that in 1879.
And he was right.
In 1879, Victor Hugo said in the 20th century, not the 21st, in the 20th century, he said, we will see the end of war, the end of hatred, the end of all that is disrupting our society these days. Well, it didn't happen in the 20th century, but it is going to happen in the 21st.
People are beginning to become a little more aware of these situations, I think, much more than they used to. The need to make this change. I think it's almost a necessity, isn't it?
I don't think there's any question about it. And once again, it's because of the ability that we now have to communicate with each other and about each other instantaneously on a global level. So there's no doubt about it that people are I hate to use the phrase because it's so worn out, but it's a good descriptive phrase. People are, in fact, waking up. We're waking up to what's going on. And we're waking up to who we are, and we're waking up to the possibilities that the future holds for us. And we are becoming keenly aware that if our children and our children's children are to have a better tomorrow, or any tomorrow at all for that matter, we're going to have to take action right now. We can't wait much longer. Scientists are telling us we've got 12 to 15, 20 on the outside years left on this planet. To preserve life as we have known it, unless we take some immediate action.
Well, they better start with the Amazon rainforest and get that fire stopped, you know what?
No kidding. And here is an interesting experience. Bolsonaro, the president of Brazil.
He's like refusing help or something.
Yeah, well, he finally said he would take help after all. If Macron would apologize to him for something that the president of France said. But, you know, he's said, no, we're not going to take help from anybody because we are nobody's colony. We don't belong to anybody else. No one's going to tell us what to do. And everyone knows that Bolsonaro has for years actually encouraged the cleaning out of the Amazon rainforest and the clearing of those lands to be used by people who want to raise cattle,
yep.
And so we can eat more meat. It's like that. It's craziness.
20% of the planet's oxygen comes from that rainforest.
That's exactly right. And so we are now, he's caving into the pressure, and that's exactly what I'm talking about. 30 years ago, that wouldn't have been possible. He would have had a couple of comments, but not with the kind of pressure he's experiencing today, as people really of all ages all over the world are standing up and saying, what in the world are you doing? What is happening here? And how can you allow this to continue? And like the G7 did just a couple of days ago, when they allocated millions of dollars in aid, and Bolsonaro is going to have to accept, and he will accept the aid after all is said and done.
When you wrote Conversations with God, how do you know, Neil, that you weren't God? That these thoughts that came in your head as you were writing on that yellow pad weren't coming from just you?
I didn't know that until I was told that. I was invited to notice that there is the idea that they were coming from someplace other than me was what the problem was. That I think there is really in those days I thought there was really a higher power that had no connection with me, that and with which I had no connection in return as well. That it was out there somewhere and I was down here someplace, and never the twain shall meet, except maybe on Judgment Day, as many of the world's mainline religions would have it. But I finally became clear that there was no separation, that there is only one thing. All things are one thing, and there is only one thing. So then I began to see, you know what, the ideas are coming from me, that the part of me that has opened to eternal wisdom and eternal clarity that resides within all of us.
Tell me what you think God is.
The question is not what is God. The question is what is God not. And the answer to that question is nothing. That is, there is nothing that God is not. So, but to be more clear in my answer to you, I believe that God is the essential essence, basically the primal energy, if you please, an energetic expression, and the nature of that expression, the vibratory frequency, if I could use that metaphor, is demonstrates itself and manifests itself in feelings that I would call, using human language, love. So if I know this is almost a sappy kind of an answer, but I believe that God is the supreme source of what we would call in human language love, the primal energy, the primal force that generates life in all of its forms.
That very well could be. What about evil, though, Neil? Because we know it's out there. Where's it coming from?
It's part of the in the physical realm in which we live. It's part of a contextual field. We and it's there by the way, not without design. It is the opposite of what we call good, and it exists in order that we might experience and express what we call good. Let me just use a real fast another metaphor.
Okay.
If I say, you know, I am the light, just to use a common metaphor that many people in the so-called new thought community use, I'm the light. Well, it's wonderful to say you're the light. It's wonderful to conceive of yourself as the light. But if you want to experience yourself as the light, that is, if you want to express that part of you that calls yourself the light, you would need something. And what you would need is the darkness. Otherwise, you'd be a candle in the sun. You're there all right, but so are a million, kajillion other candles. And you can know that you're there, but you can't experience yourself as that. So I'm suggesting to you, George, that we have come to the physical realm quite deliberately and are allowing ourselves to experience a contextual field where there is, in fact, up and down, left and right, here and there, before and after, big and small, male and female, and good and what we call evil, and that our opportunity is to use these elements in relationship to each other in such a way that we can demonstrate who we really are. Well, you know, one of the great teachers of all time put this really quite simply. He said, "Raise not your fist to heaven, and curse the darkness not, but be a light unto the darkness, that you might know who you really are."
I like that. And we have free will, don't we?
Absolutely. That is the whole point of the experience here. We have free will to make the decision with regard to who we really are and how we choose to experience and express that, all part of a larger process that we're going to loosely call evolution, the evolution of the human soul. And so, yes, we do that with absolute free will, that which we call God, at least in my vocabulary, the higher power. Interestingly enough, by the way, over 85% of the world's people believe in a higher power of some sort or another. They have a sense that, you know, there's more going on here than meets the eye. Or as Shakespeare put it much more beautifully, there are more things in heaven and earth, Horatio, than are dreamt of in your philosophy. And I think that people are clear about that. There's something more happening than is immediately apparent. But we are clear that we have free will with regard to how we use that knowledge as we move forward in our process of evolution.
If in this vast audience of millions listening to you tonight, Neil, just one person wants to change in for the better, what should they start doing? Besides, of course, reading the book, what's their first step?
Decide firmly to be and to declare, to express and to fulfill the highest thought they ever had about themselves. to really firmly, finally answer the question. Really, I hate to repeat myself over and over again, but to look at the question, who am I? Truly, who am I in this physical environment? Am I in fact a spiritual entity? And if so, what is my purpose of being in the physical environment? And how can I make that purpose manifest in my day-to-day reality? To use every moment of every day to answer the question, what does this have to do with the agenda of my soul? That's the magic question, George, that I use every day of my life. Whenever I'm involved in any activity, what should I watch on TV tonight? How should I respond to my wife across the kitchen when we're not having a really very pleasant moment? Perhaps we're having just a moment of disagreement. Or am I going to be on an all-night radio program with George Norrie? I ask myself the same question. What does this have to do with the agenda of my soul? So what an individual person could do, if they're really interested in shifting their whole reality and changing their whole life, is to ask themselves that question. In the face of every life experience, wait a minute, what does this have to do with the agenda of my soul? And another key question, by the way, that I like to invite people to ask when they're in a moment of disagreement with someone else, whether it's a friend, an associate, or a spouse, what hurts you so much that you feel you have to hurt me in order to heal it?
Good point. And that's what's happening right now. Instead of dialogue or discussion, it's anger.
And we don't know how to deal with anger. We've never been taught how to deal with anger. We haven't been told what anger is one of the seven natural emotions. It's perfectly natural to be angry. There's nothing wrong with anger. What the problem is, we don't know how to move through the experience.
That's right.
We don't know how to express the energy that we call anger.
Dissipate.
In a way that is not destructive to ourselves.
Good
and
point. Neil Donald Walsh with us. We're going to come back final hour with him. We're going to take your phone calls. Here's your opportunity to talk to a world-renowned expert, and you're next with him on Coast to Coast AM.